parsha says we're going to speak about the beginning of the parsha, which is, by the way, as a side note, the very smallest parak in all of Chumash, only 8 psukim. It's not the smallest in all of Tanakh. That would be Kufyud Ches or Zion. Kufyud Zion, right? Hallelujah, 2 psukim altogether. But nonetheless, it is 8 psukim altogether. And plus, the Gimel says, "V'yomashmini imo b'sora lasso." On the 8th day, you give him a bris milah. It's weird. It's put in the middle of nowhere. We already know you have to get a bris milah from Avraham Avinu, from Parshas Lech Lecha. That's not a question that you have to get a bris milah. And over here, we're really talking about the woman, about how tummy she's going to be, for how long she's going to be tummy. The 7 days and then 33, or the 14 days and the 66, right, when she's able to go to the Beis Mikdash, etc. And it just throws this in here. That after the baby boy has been around for 7 days, on the 8th day, you give him a milah on the flesh of his foreskin. So Rabbeinu Ephraim says, this pasuk starts and ends with the letter vav. It says, Uba Yom HaShmini, and ends with Or Lasso. Since all of Maisa Bereishis, the 6 days of creation, continue to exist through the schus of the bris milah. Yirmiyah says, Im lo barisi yomam balayla. Obviously the word barisi means bara, as in created, but it also means over here, if there was not the bris of all this, then this is the way it would go. That's the Rabbeinu Ephraim. A bris has the status, this is how it says, of someone bringing a korban on the mizbeah, based on the Zohar. The Rabbeinu Ephraim says this as well. It's as if you're bringing a korban on the mizbeah, and it makes sense. It's a form of mesiras nefesh. Any parent that watches their child go up to get a bris milah and doesn't feel that pain of, oh my gosh, what am I doing, is either an unbelievable tzaddik and is doing everything with Shem Shemayim, and I respect that guy 100%, or an absolute nut job. It's one of the two. There's no way you can't feel that little bit of pain as your kid is going up there and you're getting a bris milah. It is a bit of a cord on the mizbeach. The only difference is this time the kid, you know, it's not the same thing as the animal. The animal dies. But it's the same idea of Mesiras Nefesh bringing it about.
Yeah, but you also know, I mean, every single guy in this room got one, and we're all okay. Like,
no, we know, 100%. And that's the idea, but it's still Mesiras Nefesh at the time for the parents to give the child. That's an idea behind. The Chidah says the bris is done to knock down the Satan and his mate. The name of the Satan and his mate is Sam, Samech Mem Aleph Lamed, the poison of God, and then Lily, Lamed Yud, Lamed Yud Saf. Those two names together, Sam with Aleph Lamed, and Lily with the Saf, is 611, which is why we do a bris, which is the gematria of 612, to knock them down and take away their tumah from the world. That's the idea of what a bris milah does, to knock down the Saf. And now, the kasha is, why do we do it at such a young age? Why don't we wait for the child to grow up and to be able to do the bris milah on his own? Yishmael had that kind of the Avraham, you know, to Yitzchak, you know, saying, Yitzchak, you had it at 8 days old, you didn't have a choice, I did it at 13, I was willing to do it on my own, I'm greater than you. So we say 3 reasons why we don't allow this to happen, and the Shari Aaron brings down these 3. Number 1, if you would wait for the child to grow up to do it, he might not do it. Esav was waited upon. Esav was a red child, so Yaakov Avinu mistakenly thought that it was a form of some type of yellow baby, and wasn't sure if this was a sickness, and wasn't sure what to do, if he should be mal the child. So he waited for the child to grow up, and when Esav grew up, he said, I don't want it. So Esav never got the bris milah that he was supposed to get from Yitzchak Avinu, because Yitzchak was afraid to give it to him as a baby, and he wouldn't get it when he was older. Number 2, I would just say as a side note, I know some Jews that came from Russia when they were a little bit older that had bris milahs. They say that is unbelievably painful. They say the worst thing is to go to the washroom after you have the bris milah. The first time you go to the washroom, most painful thing in the world. So, I'm sorry, taking off the bandage. I don't want to even think about it. But number 2, since the child's skin heals quicker than it would at a later age, this is the optimal time to be able to do it. The more years you wait, the more mercy the parent, the more you would wait, there would be more pain involved. This is the best time to be able to do it on the child, the most supple time. I've read an article once about how 8 days is exactly when the blood is able to, just, it's a little bit coagulates, but on the other side, it flows a little bit better. I read an article on this years ago, I just don't remember where it is, but it happens to be on the 8 days, and somebody was trying to use it as a proof to bris milah. And number 3, parents' love for their child becomes greater and greater with age. The more they're around, the more years you wait, the more mercy the parents would have on the child and would not allow him to be hurt whatsoever. That's what we're afraid of. We need the child to have it as soon as he's born, before he gets to an age where the parents would refuse to do it. The bris milah is so important then. So why wouldn't you give him a bris milah before he's born? born. Why doesn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu make the child born already with a bris milah instead of with an orla? So this question was posed by Turnus Rufus to Rabbi Akiva. This question was posed by Turnus Rufus to Rabbi Akiva in a medrash. And somebody said it was in Talmud Bavli. I don't remember it in Talmud Bavli. Maybe somebody could show me a source for it. To my knowledge, there are three arguments of Turnus Rufus to Rabbi Akiva. I don't remember this one, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's a chulin, I just don't remember. But Turnus Rufus asked this to Rabbi Akiva in the medrash and said, why shouldn't it be? And Rabbi Akiva answered the question in a weird way. Really, Turnus Rufus said, what's greater? A maisa of God, something that God makes, or something that human beings make? And in that, what was the answer? The answer is, Rabbi Akiva says, something that human beings make. So Turnus Rufus said, why would you say that? So Rabbi Akiva said, I'm guessing that you're asking me about the bris milah. That if God made something, why would we change it by giving it a bris milah? And Turnus Rufus said, you're right, that's what I was asking. Rabbi Akiva said, it's true. What human beings make is more intricate than how HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes it in a way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not allow for perfect symmetry in certain parts of His creation to allow for people to perfect it. Instead, Rabbi Akiva, that's the whole point of the world. The whole point of the world is to take what is imperfect and to make it more perfect. That's the idea behind it. Although Marisha was created without a bris milah, without an orla, he was created just stam as a bris milah itself in that way, because that person, Adam Rishon, didn't need that perfection. He was born with perfection and then caused himself to be imperfect to perfect himself later. But human beings have this. It's the idea. It's represented well by the bris milah to show that we are imperfect at birth and we're trying our whole lives, we're trying to perfect ourselves and bring ourselves to the next level. That's the idea behind it. Now, Targum Yonasan says on the eighth day the mother becomes permitted to be with her husband, tishtri. And according to almost all research, this is what he means, that she's permitted to be with her husband, and therefore the son will then get his bris milah. The Parish Yonasan says it's all based on a Gemara, and Nida, Daflamet Aleph Mabez, that says, when Rishim Bar Yochai gave this answer to the Talmidim, why is milah done on the eighth day? Why do we do it on the eighth day? So we answered. So you won't have a situation where everyone in the room is happy, and the mother and the father are upset. Why the mother and the father upset? Because they are usher to one another. They're not allowed to touch one another. So we make it in a situation where on the eighth day, she's tahor, because even if she bleeds, the blood is dam tahor. She can't go to the Beis HaMikdash, but she's mutter to her husband. And on that eighth day, when everyone is happy, including the parents, that's when we do the bris milah. We don't want to do a bris milah when the parents are sad, so we do it on the eighth day. That's what's brought down from Rishim Bar Yochai, the Gemara Nida. That's the idea.
Why did I change the rule and make them prohibited for 2 weeks?
You know what? I wasn't going to ask that question, but it's a really good one. But I'm going to ask it. Yeah, of course I'm going to ask that. Come on. It's an obvious question. Come on. Rav Schwab asked the obvious question. He says, hold on. First of all, is it impossible for a husband and a wife to be happy when they're in Nida? Is it impossible? We're saying they can't be happy when they're in Nida with one another. Wait, is that really true?
They're not at the same level of happiness.
Is that true? Can you really not be as happy when you're in Nida? That's such a sad predicament. Is it true that you can't be that way? I'm telling you, you're causing classes, okay? For all those who are married and those who are not yet, you're causing classes. You cannot show a different game face when you're in Nida from when you are, okay? From when you're in Nida from when you're not. If you show a different game face, then your wife feels terrible. She might be in Nida, but who cares? You're supposed to have a relationship. It shouldn't be any different when she's in Nida and when she's not. It shouldn't be that way. But here we're saying, Rishon Bar Yochai is sort of like facing the facts and saying like, well, we have no choice. There's nothing you can do. It's just so difficult to be able to say. Every month a person goes into Nida. Is it shaykh that we can say, alright, you can't do any mitzvahs then because you're not the simcha the whole week or for 2 weeks. You can't be the simcha for 2 weeks out of every month, so forget it, there's no mitzvahs to be done. That's so strange. Wouldn't they at least be happy they could be makayim a mitzvah in the Torah? Wouldn't that make them happy? They're the simcha because it's a mitzvah in the Torah. That's so strange. And there's another strong question here. We have a chumrah. This chumrah was made by the woman. It's not from Chazal. The women were machmir upon themselves, that when they see dam, they sit for seven nikiyim until they finish seeing dam. That's the halacha. So they see blood for whatever. So even if we would go for nowadays, no woman becomes tohor to her husband after 7 days. It doesn't happen. The woman is tamei until she waits 7 days afterward. That could take a month. That could take 2 months. That could take 3 months until she's finally able to be mutter to her husband. So why is the bris milah done on the eighth day, says Rav Schwab? If the whole reason is that we want the husband and wife to be happy, then why would we wait? And even more so, why would the woman do that if it messes over this this halacha. This halacha, you have to give a bris mila on the eighth day so that the man, and the woman will be happy. But this messed over the halacha, why would they take it upon themselves to knock themselves out from the mitzvah of being happy at their son's bris mila? So how could that be? So he says that the whole concept of nida stems from the onus of Chava eating from the eitz hadas. And I think we all know that, and we all understand that. Chava ate from the eitz hadas, and therefore she got a punishment that she was going to be a nida, and that's the idea behind it. During this time when she was in nida, Hashem made it a natural feeling within a woman that while she's in nida, she feels tsar. There's a bit of a pain within her that's all there, and it's there from Chava's sin, and it's there as long as she's in nida, and especially during childbirth. During childbirth, the pasuk says, the eight says, till divanim. In sadness, you will give birth to a child. And that sadness is there, it is a natural feeling that's there, and it's a tikkun for Chava's chait. And it's there for 7 days. For the whole week after she gives birth, that curse of the eats of tel divanim, the curse that was given for her doing the wrong thing, that's there. So when the ingrained sadness goes away after 7 days, it has nothing to do with the fact that she's mutter to her husband, technically. It's the fact that the simcha is back after those 7 days. Now what about the husband himself? Is he sad or is he happy? Him being in a situation where his wife has that sadness makes him sad as well. I don't know. There are women who definitely have something called postpartum depression, where they get depressed and they get sad after they've given birth to a child, as if they're losing a part of them, they don't know what to do with themselves. That is a serious matter. And that can happen at any point after they give birth until later on. It seems to say, this idea from Rav Schwab is seeming to say that every woman is postpartum depression. It's automatic for the first 7 days, even though they're happy they have a child. There's a special postpartum depression that they have that nobody else can understand, and husbands don't get. It's not the same when it comes to it. This is the concept that's ingrained within them from that point. Since the sadness of the xeris akasav, of that onesh, goes away after 7 days, you can give a bris mila in 8 days, even if you're machmer about the husband and wife being together. So even if you're machmer that, that's the idea, says Rosh Hashanah, you can still do it. But there are other answers. The Gra says, based on Shabbos Kuf Lamed Aleph, any mitzvah that was taken upon ourselves with simcha, we continue to do besimcha. And any mitzvah that we took upon ourselves out of sadness, we continue to have issues with even today. A mitzvah that we do besimcha is bris mila. A mitzvah they do with sadness, that they accepted with sadness, was a riot. And people still have problems with a riot even today with all these types of issues. Says the Gra, even though the reason behind the mitzvah doesn't apply, the reason for the mitzvah was that the husband and the wife were going to be mutter after 7 days, and on the eighth day the man and the wife were going to be together. Even though that reason doesn't apply anymore, says the Gra, nonetheless it doesn't matter. The mitzvah still exists no matter what, and they're still happy because there's DNA ingrained within them that they should be happy because they accepted it with simcha, therefore they should still have it with simcha. It's still the same way. One time the Gra was sitting at a table with a bunch of his bachurim, and the bachurim came up to him and he said to them, it was Friday night, and he said to them, do you guys eat garlic today? Do you eat garlic on Erev Shabbos? There is the Takana of Ezra. It's in Bava Kama at the end of the 8th Perek. One of the Takanas of Ezra is that you should eat garlic on Erev Shabbos. So we asked the Bachum, do you eat garlic? They said, Rebbe, it doesn't apply to us because the real reason why you're supposed to eat garlic is for Puruvu. And garlic doesn't apply to us because we're not married yet. So the Gra said, then you might as well not have a bris meal on the 8th day. That's what he told them. So nobody understood what he meant. So the Chayei Adam was there, and the Chayei Adam said, maybe what he meant was the following. He said to the Vilna Gaon, maybe what he meant was, is that the only reason why we keep meal on the eighth day now is not for the reason given by Rav Shimon bar Yochai, it's because the mitzvah is to give it on the eighth day. There's no real reason behind it. So if you, the same thing with Ezra's Takanos. Even the Takanos of Chazal should be kept even if the reasons go away. So meaning, even though the reasoning of eating garlic in Erev Shabbos doesn't necessarily apply for Bachurim, it's not about the reasons. It's about doing what Chazal told us to do. So therefore, if you're not going to eat garlic in Erev Shabbos, maybe you shouldn't have a bris meal on the eighth day. Is that what you meant? Said the Gra? Yes, that's what I meant. So, I've never had garlic on Erev Shabbos. I don't even know if I want to have garlic on Erev Shabbos. But I'm going to tell you that I'm going to have some garlic tomorrow at some point. Probably not raw. I'll try to cook it a little bit and then maybe smash it onto a bagel or something. What?
Okay, so I'll try to make it part. Yeah, that's actually not bad. A garlic bagel. That'll be a good smart thing. Yeah, garlic bread. I'm going to make garlic bread. It's all good stuff. Oh, from Emma's. Not even, even better. Right? But I'm going to have some garlic tomorrow because of this over here. As a side note, by the way, but this is the famous place where the Vilna Gaon goes on about my macronin. That people don't do my macronin now because there's melech sedomis. We don't have melech sedomis anymore. That we don't have that sedom salt, so we don't have to worry about blinding ourselves. The idea behind the gra is that it doesn't matter that we don't have melech sedomis. The idea of my macronin was a durabanan that was added out that we have to do, and therefore we do it. It's not. It has nothing to do with whether or not there's a reason that applies that's not here anymore. It doesn't matter. Once you have a chiyuv, you're there. So that seemingly, according to this gra, it was. I wouldn't have thought that way, and I have to do the sugya. So I'd have to see like what these things were and what each one of them was.
Ten
tikkunos, yeah. Many of them we do though. The Monday and Thursday laning, those types of things we do. There are a bunch of them. So I'd have to go through and see which ones we still apply and which ones we don't. That's the famous one. They brought to Rav Chaim Kanievsky once. I read this in Derech Sicha. Rav Eliamun brought him. There was a person who had a milk. They still deliver milk in Bnei Brak because it's like 1943. So they still deliver milk there. So they brought milk bottles there. And one time, one of the milk bottles, the top of it came off. And the person took it into their house. That's obviously, you know, Chalav Gilui, right? Mayim Gluyim, which is revealed water. So what's the reason why we don't drink from Mayim Gluyim? Because we're afraid of snakes, right? So they took the milk and they poured it out. And as they poured it out, they found there was a snake inside there. An actual snake. So they brought it to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. So Rav Chaim Kanievsky said, "Oh, I knew it. I knew it. Makbid Amayim Gluyim, that you still have to be that Akbar Amayim Gluyim. I'm waiting for the snake to come. I've still never seen a snake outside of a zoo, so I'd like to see a snake.
Really?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, guys. I know this is crazy, but yeah, no, it's good times. Anyway, but the Sforno gives another reason. Sforno was a doctor. Just remember this as well. The Sforno was a doctor. He gives a somewhat more natural reason. Dam Nida is inside the woman. And the child has been living off that while he was in the womb. In a way, the blood of the nida, the blood of the woman, in some way, is able to feed and surround the child that allows the child to be there. There's food, there's blood, whatever it is that allows him to live. It takes 7 days for that blood of the womb, the blood that's tummy, to be expunged completely from the system of the child. Therefore, on the 8th day, he no longer is tummy, he's now tahor, therefore he can have the bris. Somewhat of a more scientific explanation.
She's coming more.
Well, then there's no bris.
Not
I think.
But
it's not in this country.
14. Yeah, it takes her a little bit longer. In economy, for Tuma, right? But regarding a bris, if you're doing the bris, that's problematic. But the Kliyakar. Same idea. Well, yeah, no, it isn't. It is interesting. Kushia Leda is definitely more by girls than it is by boys. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, maybe that's so. Maybe there's a difference in some idea. I don't know. I don't know what the natural idea is. The Kliyakar says the same type of idea. The amount of time that the child takes to become Torah is the same amount of time that it takes the woman to become Torah. That's going to be 7 days altogether. That idea behind that. Maybe because Kedusha is 8, Kedusha is beyond the 7, etc. So Sefes Bracha seems to say, listen, this is from a Gemara. The milk of a nursing woman comes from the blood of the woman, meaning Nida blood turns into milk. We don't see exactly how that's so nowadays. That's something that's a little bit questionable nowadays, but according to Gemara, it seems that the blood of the Nida turns into the milk of the lady as she's nursing the child.
Change.
In a way, I know, it's strange. But regardless, they say that the milk stems from that blood. So if the child is drinking from the milk for the first 7 days of his life, and that blood is tamei, that means that the child is still tamei. This is how this is broken. Puts it, Baruch Epstein. But on the 8th day, the blood is tahor, and therefore the child is tahor, and the child can get his bris milah.
You have a bris milah, that's what.
So you'd assume that it would recover. I'm just saying, that's how this whole stuff is, Baruch Hu puts it.
To develop
in the first place. Well, there's something. You know, there's something there. Yeah, even immediately.
Less than 8 days?
I'm sorry?
You can have a bris milah less than 8 days.
Agreed. Now, many of these reasons will not apply to like an Evid or something like that, but you should know, we still hold, if the bris milah is done before 8 days, you have to do Hatafas Dam Bris on day 8. If you mess up and you do it on day 5, day 6, day 7, right, then you have to do something else on day 8. It doesn't count as a real bris milah la halacha. You have to do something else instead. Alright, but then you get the Rambam. The Rambam and Mori Nebuchadnezzar
Shulchan. This is in Perk Memtes, in Chelik Aleph Perk Memtes, says that we wait until the eighth day because the child has to be stronger and no longer worry about him dying. If you do it in the first 7 days, it's very possible that he's going to die. The 7 days, you have to worry about whether he's going to live or not. Once you get to the eighth day, then you know he's already strong enough to be able to handle it, so that's when you give the bris milah itself. And Vayikur Rabba Chav Zayin and Devarim Rabba on Perk Vav, we all say that Hashem has mercy on the child to not give him a bris until he has the strength enough to be able to handle it. They both say that the Midrashim are saying like that Mori Nevuchim, or the Mori Nevuchim says like those Midrashim. The Orach Chaim HaKadosh says the reason why you have to wait for all 8 days is because you have to pass by Shabbos. The koach of a Jew comes from Shabbos Kodesh. And everything you do during the week comes from Shabbos. In order for him to be able to handle the bris milah, to be able to take the pain that comes with the bris milah, he needs Shabbos to pass through his system to be able to make it through and to be able to go. I'm sorry? So that's already Akasha, and they asked that. And I couldn't find that this year, and I can't remember where I saw it originally. Somebody said, so why not always do it on Sunday? I forgot where it is, but it must be that it's a combination of both. You need a bunch of days, and you need Shabbos. So it's got to be something like that. Well, ain't economy. But nonetheless, it would be there. Tosus adds to the wording of the Medrash Mashal to a king whose friend came to visit. And he makes a huge meal in honor of his friend. Invites his friend over and makes this massive, massive meal. He commands his servants to all honor this friend and tell the friend, anything that this guy wants, you go ahead and give to him. As they bring all the food to the table itself and everybody's coming inside, the king says, we have to wait for the most beautiful woman in the world. We have to wait for that woman to come in so that everyone can see her beauty and then we can sit down and eat. That's what we're going to be able to do. That'll give you the strength, the koach. After seeing such a woman, such beauty in the world, then you'll be able to sit and eat. Before you give a bris to a child, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the child to see Shabbos. And that's the queen, so to speak, the beauty of Shabbos, to be able to make it through the rest. That's the concept of what goes in over here. Now, Rav Moshe turns this into a whole speech about chinuch and how to be mechanach a child. What's the pshat that he has to see Shabbos? Yes, Shabbos. What's the koach of understanding there's a Shabbos? This is a lesson in chinuch from a parent to a child for the rest of their lives is something that every parent has to do for their child, he says. To believe that the world was created in 6 days and to refrain from doing anything more on Shabbos, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stopped doing whatever it means to stop doing work on Shabbos, then we don't work on Shabbos because of that. Everything about this child being born in that day, it's all about getting to Shabbos to be able to teach the child that this is what Shabbos is, this is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. That's the emunah that he has to go up with. The mother has to know that she's tamei until she can find a way to teach the child properly about Shabbos. He is stark about this. He has two pieces on it, Rav Moshe, and goes on and on, and he says that's the biggest problem, that people are growing up and they don't realize the koach of Shabbos. They don't realize how special Shabbos is for anyone. And they're growing up with, he calls it apikorsis, terrible apikorsis, that they're not understanding what Shabbos is all about. And from that, we say there's no point in giving the child a bris if we don't do it on the eighth day in order for him to understand the concept of Shabbos. That's the idea behind it. Very stark word. The whole thing is an unbelievably stark word, Moshe, and how to be able to do it. But there's another explanation. That was all dealing with Shabbos. That 8 days are all about Shabbos. 8 days are all about getting to Shabbos itself. The Tosefes Bracha, the Baruch Hashem that I mentioned before, the Torah Tmima, gives another answer, which I think is somewhat obvious. And I just saw this in the Nesivos Shalom today as well. The idea is so obvious that I think we all know it. 7 is a number that's used throughout the entire Torah. Throughout the entire Torah, you see that number 7 all over the place. 7 represents completion, shlemus, the absolute, you've completed it, you've finished it, here's where you are. You just did those 7 days all together. We see there are those that are makbid not to bench the moon. They don't do Kiddush Levana until the 7th night after the 7 days, right, of the new moon. And the pshat is because the moon is not considered shalem or starting to get its aura back until 7 days into the week. Although we don't paskin that way. We paskin, you can do it after 3. Sfardim do?
Sfardim
hold that way. Ashkenazim hold 3, and sometimes there are those that still hold 7, right? But although that's not an official pshat, and actually that's not the Siva, by the way. As a side note, even if you hold it 7, it's not because of this. It's for something else. Right? But nonetheless, this Siba is given by the Rishonim as to why it should be, because 7 is the full thing. When Eliyahu HaNavi brought Yonah back to life, How many sneezes did the child make? 7 sneezes, which is weird. But that was the Tchiyas HaMesim through that. You see this idea of being around Naaman, when he had Saras, in order to get rid of the Saras, dipped himself 7 times into the Jordan River to be able to get rid of that Saras and to be taken off, and that's that. Hilchos Nida, apply for a total of 7 days. A Mitzora is checked and healed over a period of 7 days. Sheva Brachos are obviously over a period, the Shivas Yemei Mishnah, the 7 days of the Mishnah itself. Avelus is for 7 days. Chag is for 7 days. I'm not including Shemini Atzeres. Chag is for 7. Shavuos is a week of, it's a chag of weeks, of sevens. It's 7 weeks. Shmita is obviously 7. Yovel is obviously 7. You're dealing with all these because 7 represents a full cycle, going around and finishing and being done with it. And if so, we want the child to undergo a period of completion, a period of fullness, to make himself complete in some way. And that's the idea of 7 days have to pass, and in the 8th day you can circumcise the child. That's, by the way, why it's got to be on the 8th day. You need 7 full days. It's not 7th day that you can give the bris meal. You need 7 full days to go to the 8th day. That's the concept of what you have to do over here. Says the Chidah, Zriz Matim L'Mitzvos. And the truth is, I'm still not so sure why we don't do this, but halachically, Zriz Matim L'Mitzvos means you're supposed to do a bris meal as soon as you can in the day. I remember in Eretz Yisrael, the minig everywhere that I saw by everyone is that you just, it wasn't like after Shacharis. Everybody went to Shacharis, and then at 9 o'clock, you just got together for a bris. It was always at 9 o'clock. I mean, yeah, there were a couple that were a little bit earlier, but it was always 9 o'clock was known that was bris time. If you had a bris, it always happened at that time. I remember, you go to the Gedolim's houses, they're not leaving to go to the bris until about 8 o'clock, 8:15, 8:30, even though they're the Sandik. It's just, it was the normal thing to do, and I'm not so sure why Zriz Makdim L'Mitzvos, which means do it as early as possible, doesn't apply in these situations. Normally it does. Normally it would, so you'd think that would apply over here as well. But either way, regardless, a person is supposed to do it, and the idea is, says the Chidah, that you want to be doing this after 7 days. Why 7 days, says the Chidah? 7 days is 180 hours. 180 hours, which is the gematria of 3 of Hashem's names, he says. The 72 letter name, the 63 letter name, and the 45 letter name, as well as a hint to the first person to have gotten a bris milah at 8 days, Yitzchak, who lived to 180 years. So the 180 hours is a hint to Yitzchak. So there's another reason why it's 8. Why on the 8th day? To allow yourself to have those koach of the Shemos and to have the power of Yitzchak, a remiss to what happens over here. That's where the 180 comes from. I'm sorry?
80 is 7 and a half.
180.
7 and a half.
7
is...
plus 12 hours.
And the 8th night. The 8th night. That's right. The 8th night. Yeah, my bad. I'm sorry. I added on the 8th night. I just didn't say it. You got to hear the Chassam Sofer. This is one of the greatest Chassam Sofers I've heard in a long, long time. I did say the greatest Chassam Sofer of all time in Shir 2 days ago, so I'm sorry about that. That is the greatest Chassam Sofer of all time, aside from another one. But this one is up there in like the top 25 Chassam Sofers that you'll ever hear. And for right now, this is the greatest Chassam Sofer you'll ever hear in your life. So I'm counting this as this one. One time, there was a person who was hurt very badly, and they were trying to stop the bleeding. So they took this bandage and tried to stop it, but they couldn't stop the bleeding. And all the nurses, the doctors were coming around, they were trying to stop it up, and they couldn't do anything whatsoever. They couldn't do anything. Someone realized that one of the nurses must be in Nida. So she pulled out the nurses, the woman nurses that were there, right? And as soon as he pulled out all of them, they were able to stop the bleeding. They're able to stop it. Now, this happens to be that there is something strange where, well, but it's true in a certain way. Cycles of women, when the women are together in one area, usually end up syncing with one another. And in a way, there could be that when a woman is bleeding at the moment, that blood flow allows for other blood to flow at the same time.
I would assume so.
But nonetheless, there could be something to it because it does sync up with one another. There is something to it, right? So the question is, does this happen? Regardless, the Chassam Sofer says that's that. This would make sense why we delay the bris until the 8th day. Does everybody get it? Why are we waiting until the 8th day? Because the mother is bleeding, and the mother will be by the child. If the mother is going to be by the child, and the mother is going to be bleeding at that moment, that means that the mother's dam flow, the blood flow, will cause the child's blood to flow, which will be a sakana for the baby. That's what we're worried about. We're worried about the baby being in sakana, being in a danger because he's he's near the mother who has a blood flow, and therefore we stop. Therefore, after the 7 days are off, at the eighth day when the blood flow stops, or is at least gam tahor, then we say we're not going to have a problem with something like this. This is the idea behind it of how it goes through. Now, even though, la halacha, we don't hold this way, because we still give a bris milah to it, child of a shifcha, meaning an eved that's born, you give him even on the first day. Or if the child is born through a C-section, and there is no blood flow that's coming through, there is no dam yoledes that comes through, nonetheless we give a child the bris on the eighth day, the concept may be hinted to over here. As a side note, this is just something that everybody has to know. There is a famous line from a Pinchas Mikoritz that said over a story, I don't know where he said this from, but it's brought down the time of Menachem, that when there was a person who was hemorrhaging, Dr. Galber, maybe you can help me with that. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but there was a person that was hemorrhaging in a room, and somebody passed by and said, quickly, go get a bottle of very strong wine. And they brought wine, and he was hemorrhaging to his death. It was terrible. He brought the wine and allowed, somehow, stop the bleeding enough from his head to be able to make him drink the wine. And after he drank that wine, however much, it was a good, you know, good cup or two cups or whatever it was, the bleeding stopped. And when they said to him, how did you get that? Where did you know that blood stops, the blood flow stops, or hemorrhaging stops with drinking wine? He said, it's a pasuk in the Torah. The dam anavim suso, which is a pasuk in Vayechi, by the bracha of Yosef, of which one is it? It's by Yehuda, Yehuda? I think it might be by Yehuda. The dam anavim suso is the blood of grapes will be what he washes his clothing with. That's how it's translated. He said, the dam for blood, anavim, grapes, suso, in Aramaic, asuta means to heal. So dam anavim suso, and he said, that's the pshat behind it. I've never seen it. I've tried looking this up. It's brought down in the time of Menachem based on Pinchas Mikoritz, but he brought it from another guy, and he didn't say the name of the person that he brought it from. And it says, the dominant of Suso, that's the pshat. I've never heard of this before. I've looked it up hundreds of times. I've never been able to find anything on it.
It's more like someone who's like really, really holy, who will learn how to drush, and Hashem will make it happen.
We'll make it happen through that guy. It's not a bad call. It's not a bad call. But it reminded me of this Ksam Sofer for the same reason. In a similar vein, the Parsha says, since Mila is in place of a Kohen bringing a korban on the Mizbeach, as we set up above, Elio is the Kohen who comes to bless the child. Like, he's there at every bris Mila for that way. There could be no nida in an area where the korban is taking place. You can't have tumas nida in that area. So the bris milah can't happen before the 8 days are done, says the Paradis Yosef, because if the woman is in nida, she wouldn't be allowed to be on the mizbeach together with her child who's getting the bris milah. So for that reason, it's not going to be there. So even though I will tell you from our bris milahs, you never see the woman there. The woman's always behind the curtains, like around, you know, somewhere outside. She's never right there. I was once at a bris where I was... One of the Rebbeim in Skokie Shu was a Sandik, and I was the everything else, right? Doing all the other stuff there. Not the mall. That's not the mall. That would be scary, right? But that was happening. So it was a not from Bris Mila, the parents weren't from. The husband and wife were holding hands together behind the child, like standing over the child. It was as weird as you can get. It definitely was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen before in my life. I'm just not used to it, I guess, and that's the reason why. But regardless, that idea, says the Paradis Yosef, is that the woman cannot be there if it's a korban and she's in nida at the time. Since it's technically not in nida by the 8 days, therefore it's mutter to be able to put them in that area. Now, there's a Paradis Yosef, Bala Turim over here, and there's an Orach Chaim, but I'm skipping that for right now. In Menachos Mem Gimel and Beis, we say that when David HaMelech went to the bathhouse, he was upset because he couldn't find a single mitzvah on himself. He saw himself naked, and he said, I've got nothing. I've got absolutely nothing here. There's no mitzvah on the door of a bathhouse, right? We don't normally have that in the door of a bathhouse itself. And he felt like he had no mitzvos on him that he could do, no tefillin, no tzitzis, no anything that was there. And once he saw his bris milah, he was happy and he said, at least I have the mitzvah of bris milah. And he sang a song, Lam Natzeach al Hashminis, Tehillim Yud Beis, on the fact that he was able to be in the mikvah and be around the Rishwab. I'm sorry? No, Vav. It would be Vav, but that's a different issue. It's a different thing. But Lam Natzeach al Hashminis is the one that he for sure made up. There's a whole, the Rishash talks about it right there in the Gemara Menachos. Rishwab asked, why didn't we think about it right then and not every night when he got naked in order to go to bed? There's always a couple minutes where you're standing there naked. When you're in a shower, wouldn't it be the same thing? It's not like you're only sitting there and it's the only time that he was ever undressed. So it could be David Malach was a chassid and probably got dressed underneath the covers. So there was no point where he actually was uncovered enough to be able to say, I only have my bris milah. Otherwise,
this could be, but you'd assume that Dovin Melech wasn't thinking this the first time we went to the mikvah. What made him all of a sudden think about it, says Rashab right then when he was standing right over there. So he said, granted, wherever I am, I could think in learning. There's no problem with me thinking and learning, even if I'm naked. But you can't do that when you're in a bathhouse. Can't do that when you're in the bathhouse. You're not allowed to think and learning when you're in the bathhouse itself. So I can't think about anything when I'm in the bathhouse. Then what should I do? What kind of mitzvah is there? And therefore he said bris milah. But there's a kash on that. I don't understand. Is it a mitzvah to have a bris milah? Or is it a mitzvah to do a bris milah? Am I in the kayim a mitzvah every second of every day for having a bris milah? Or am I mekayim a mitzvah for doing a bris milah? And if I'm mekayim a mitzvah only for doing the bris milah, then what's Dovin Melech saying? Oh, I have a bris milah. Therefore, I'm doing a mitzvah even now. There's no mitzvah. How is there a mitzvah at this second? You're not doing a mitzvah. There's no mitzvah here. I just happen to have a bris milah. That's that. So what is it? Perhaps, he says, is Rav Schwab, that the mitzvah of bris milah is to constantly be reminded of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in every time, wherever we go, no matter what we're doing. And even in a bathhouse where you think the Shekhinah is not manifest, where you wouldn't have the Shekhinah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu or HaKadosh Baruch Hu with you at that time, you take off your tzitzis, you take off everything else, you just have a bris milah. Nonetheless, there's an inyan of tznius, the one has to have yira, that's something, and that's what Dovin Melech was thinking about. The inyan of tznius, the inyan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with me, the inyan of even when I'm naked, I still have an inyan to follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'll tell you something amazing. When I was my third year in Eretz Yisrael, I stayed in Eretz Yisrael for Pesach, and I ended up having, for the eighth day, I had no idea where I was going to go. Staying around Mea Sharon. I wasn't sure where I was going to go for a meal. My relatives were out of town. They anywhere were Israeli. There was nobody that I knew around that area who was keeping an eighth day of Pesach. So I found a sign on the Mir Yeshiva. I wasn't in the Mir yet. I was in base, but we stayed over Pesach in the Mir. I saw a sign that said, if anybody wants a meal, you can come to this orphanage that's right by Strauss Street, and you can go there, and we're going to have meals for anybody who wants to come. So I went there with a couple friends of mine, and there were hundreds of people there. Hundreds of people that were all there. It started with somebody in Boston, a lawyer in Boston. This woman was a lawyer in Boston. Her husband was, I think, in Colo. I don't know who it was. But they made this whole huge meal, and we all went to it. It was all there. And I was sitting across from a guy from Aish. So this guy was like a raw, just off the boat, etc. type of guy. But he had cut all of his hair. All of his hair. He said he had hair that was down to over here. He had cut everything off except for his payas. And he kept his payas. And he said he's going back. He had to go back to America. And I said, are you going to keep your payas there? He looked like crazy. So he had these like huge long payas were like down to here, and he was like, he were curled and everything, and he was sitting there. I said, are you really going to keep those payas? And he said, he looked like a really, like one of those guys that was like cool, but you know, whatever. So he said, yeah, I have to. He said, the kippah I can take off, but the payas I'm leaving on. The payas are part of my system. They're right here. So on that, right on the spot, I said, then why didn't Dovin HaMelech say to himself when he was in the mikvah that at least I have payas? Good cop, right? I mean, he had a bris milah, right? But aren't payas the same thing? You'd assume that Dovin HaMelech at least had payos, right? At least he had something. So I found the Ben Ish Chai asked this question in the Ben Yoyada. I didn't find it then. I asked the guy, and then I don't know what happened with this guy. I asked him what he did for a living. He said he's a construction worker that makes things go boom. So I have a feeling that that thing might have not lasted, but maybe this guy's, I don't know, maybe he became Rebel Yashiv. I have absolutely no idea. I'm not sure what the end of the story is. I don't remember his name. Although it was something like Blake. It's something, you know, that you wouldn't have expected as a real Jewish name. But regardless, this idea that goes through, the Ben Yoyada asks it and says, what about the payas? So it could be that payas are a mitzvah, but it's a lav. Lo sakifu pa'as roshkam. You're not allowed to cut down the payas of your head. He wanted a mitzvah asay. He wanted a positive commandment that he could do to positively bring himself out, and that has to be the bris milah itself. That's one way to be able to go through. That's that. Another answer may be, the payas may be here for now. But as we all know, when people grow older, it's possible that you'll lose your hair. Something will happen. The payas will go away. The bris milah always remains. Bris milah does not go away. That's going to be with you forever. And that's what Dovin Melech was saying. No matter what I do, I'll always have my bris milah. It'll never go away. I'm going to be able to have that. I'm going to end with this. Man, there's a really good Elena Shabbat if you want to go look it up. But I'll end with this right over here. The Belzer Rebbe says an amazing thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no reason to ask anyone as to whether they should be created or not. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's brought down in Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Ches Mabez, B'tzivyonam Nivru, that every person is created according to their own tzivyon, according to what they're supposed to be, and you are asked. Before you come down from Shemayim down to earth, they say, do you want this body? Do you want this personality? Do you want this? Do you want that? Everything that you have, you agreed upon, and you said, yes, that's what I want. Every single person here. That's why you really don't want to be like anybody else except for me, and I know why you want to be like me. But nobody wants to be like anybody else, right? It's not for me. And the reason why is because you would never trade with anybody else. You would never do it because you chose yourself. Your neshama chose who you are and everything about you. You just wouldn't do it. I'm sorry? It's based on that Gemara in Yechasim Abayz and Rosh Hashanah. So it goes through that everybody chose their own surah. Everything was over there. When Hashem tells the lowly creatures of the world why they should come into the world in neshamas, why they should be in the world, they all say, you get to fulfill your desires, you get physical pleasures. Those lowly neshamas says, okay, that's why I want to be here. They're happy to join the world. They want to do so. But when he goes up to the higher neshamas, the neshamas of the great tzaddikim, the holy tzaddikim, they say, God, why would we want to go down into an area where it's very possible we're going to sin and do something wrong and embarrass you and make a chilul Hashem when we can stay underneath your kisya kavod and not do anything at all? This is an unbelievable reward as it is. You can't convince me to leave by going into an area and going through. So what did the Kaddish Baruch Hu say? Don't worry. If you go down, you can improve upon yourselves and you can be even greater because you can cause other people to do mitzvahs. So for example, by going down, you can allow your parents to be makayim the mitzvah of nida, that they won't be together for those first 7 days. They won't touch each other for 7 days. And then you could be makayim. They could be makayim alav. So through you, a mitzvah could happen. And that automatically allows you to be down. See, that's the reason why you should go down on earth. So the neshama is not convinced by that. Listen, if I don't go down at all, there won't be the issue of nida. So there won't be that issue in the first place. I'm causing a problem, and it's possible that they'll keep the mitzvah. That's not good enough for me. I don't want that. That's not enough to be able to convince me to go down. So then the Malachim use another argument. And they say, and that's the whole surah of the parsha, says the Balzer Rebbe. Don't worry, because when you go down, you'll get a bris milah. And you won't be able to mess that up. Because when you're 8 days old, you have no choice. You're going to get it automatically. So you're going to get it whether you like it or not. Your parents are going to give it to you. You'll accomplish a mitzvah for your soul automatically that you'll do the same Shemayim without any other pineos, no other thoughts, and that's that. And your parents will be doing it with no other thought other than this is what Klal Yisrael needs, this is what Klal Yisrael wants. Once the Neshama hears that, it begins to agree. You know what? Maybe that is the right thing to do. Maybe I should come down. And it's the beginning of what it goes through. The Belzer Rebbe then goes through the next six psukim, explaining each one as another argument as to why the Neshama comes down until finally the Tohera, that it ends up being Tahor, the Neshama decides it's going to go into the body itself and go into the tzaddik. But the mitzvah of bris milah allows the Neshama to begin its journey in coming back down over here. You have time to look at Alinu Shabbat. That's an awesome, there's a great story over there that he brings through. At the end of the day, we went through the idea behind bris milah, the kedusha, why we don't do it by a kid under the age of 8, why we don't wait for the kid to get older, why you're not born that way. We went through that in the beginning. And then we said the different ideas that you need Shabbos to go through, perhaps you need 7 days to go through. Maybe there's a natural reason from the Sforno, perhaps the more nevuchim of the idea of being stronger, that idea behind it. We also went through the whole idea from the Targum Yonasan that they're permitted to their husband, whether they are or they aren't, the other ideas. We had the Chassam Sofer with the crazy thing with the blood. We went through Menachos, Mem Gimel Beis, and we gave 3 answers for it, but I have another 5 over here that I didn't say. And then the Belzer Rebbe's idea behind why the Bris Milah is such an amazing thing. Shkoyach, everybody. Have a good Shabbat.